Are you someone who tries to drive while distracted by your phone? Someone who props it on the steering wheel or peeks down at it for a glance? Or just scrolls and scrolls? If so, you could be the next person to get into a fender bender, get a ticket, veer off the road, or even cause a crash that kills you or someone else. Enough already. Put the phone away or pay. Paid for by NHTSA.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
3-1 to Ohtani. The pitch swung on and drilled.
The Rich Eisen Show with guest host David Sampson.
Stephon Diggs traded.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
From Buffalo to the Houston, Texas.
What the hell going on?
Earlier on the show, ESPN college basketball analyst Seth Greenberg. Senior writer for The Athletic, Andrew Marchand. Coming up, USL Executive Vice President of Football Operations, Daryl Johnston. And now, sitting in for Rich, it's David Sampson.
Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. It's David Sampson sitting in for Rich Eisen, having my agent pwned during the break. Thank you so much. I can't even understand why. What age is it no longer really good to hear someone say, hey, you're that age?
Because of that age.
You guys know what I meant. We're talking about Avatar, and I think Avatar 2 is an absolute flop.
$1 billion.
Yeah, but exactly. He doesn't. It made $1 billion.
Yeah, but you don't understand the definition of flop. You guys don't understand.
We're that age.
I don't know anyone in the movie business. We use rocks.
And then we started talking about Star Wars.
I know
okay?
No one in the movie business. I don't understand how that works.
You guys are of an age when Star Wars premiered.
Yeah.
1977. You just remember when it debuted.
Yeah.
That's what I meant.
Yes.
I think nothing of that moment when Star Wars.
You're like, I didn't.
You didn't see it in the theater?
I may have, but I'm not a sci-fi
first
guy.
One.
Maybe the first one.
But you're a huge movie guy.
Yes, but in 1977, it's really the last 20, 25 years that I watched a movie every day, which is true. And during football season, it's actually more difficult because football now has taken over every night of the week.
Time out. Not to interrupt. Did I hear you just say that you watch a movie every single day?
Every single day without fail.
Really?
For multiple decades. My whole baseball career, my Wall Street career, always.
Every like single day, you watch
every
one movie
day,
start to finish.
I watch a movie start to finish. Sometimes it's a movie I've seen before. I'm reviewing on Nothing Personal, my top 100. I carry around my top 100 list, and every Thursday I review a movie for my top 100.
Wow.
But I review a movie every day. I watch a movie every day. Sometimes I watch movies to feel, because Rich told me I can be very wiry and robotic. Oh, no, sorry, I meant Dan.
Let's get
I'm very wiry and
robotic. I'm going to touch on this later right near the end of the show.
That's all I watch are movie channels on... At home, I'm not a sport. I don't like, because if I work sports, but most of the time it's like just movies.
I've been excited to speak to Daryl Johnston since I was told he was going to be on.
Yeah.
Daryl, it's David Sampson. How are you?
I'm awesome, David. Hey, okay, so where do you have Dead Poets Society in your 100?
Dead Poets Society is in my top 100. That is a great call, and that is a very underrated movie. Robin Williams. UFL Executive Vice President, I want to make sure we get this right. Are you going to stand on the desk?
I was going to do it. I'll captain my captain.
I would like you not to because I don't want you to get hurt on my watch.
Thank you.
Please, just stay in your seat.
Well, I'm head of HR here, so it's fine. It doesn't matter. I approve this.
Yeah, he actually is.
There's no way you're head of HR. I do not accept that. Daryl, can we talk about the UFL? Because you're the VP of Football Operations, and the debut has happened. The UFL, the interesting thing, the business side of the merger, but I want to go on field for a minute because it's almost like your league is a training ground for NFL rule changes. And so do you feel that responsibility when you're thinking about your game that you actually are doing things that are going to be across the entire industry of football?
Well, we threw him a little bit of a curveball this year. The XFL style of the kickoff, when we came together as a merger, we actually went with the USFL style. So that was a little bit of a curveball thrown. So we just felt that jumping from a traditional kickoff to the XFL style from 2023 was one of those quantum leaps. And how do you unroll that if you don't really like it, if it doesn't pass the test in the NFL after the 1-year trial? So ours is kind of that gradual progression. You know, we really take a kickoff and kind of turn it into a punt. But you're exactly right. It's an opportunity not only for rules, but for technology. I think one of the things that we had in week one was the true line component in our game with the measurements. And a lot of people really like that piece of technology that we had. I think the transparency with our command center with Mike Pereira and Dean Blandino. You can kind of get taken to the inside of that conversation and really kind of hear the why, which I think is something that that fans have always wanted to be able to hear. So, yeah, we're able to push the envelope a little bit more in some different areas. And we've always gotten some really good positive feedback from the fans.
Are your referees in a union? Are they unionized by chance?
I would think so. I would think so. I'm not 100%
what made
sure,
me but smile, Daryl,
Dean Blandino.
Is that one of the reasons why we don't let the audience hear a lot of what goes on in replay, they don't like to be embarrassed by missed calls. So they don't want us, the umpires union doesn't want there to be a big focus when there's an overturning of a call. You're just supposed to move past it. Don't talk about it and just keep going. And a rule got changed where now the umpires can talk to the spectators and explain what's going on. Because one of the biggest issues has been that the fans, the audience, doesn't know, but the TV audience does. So you'd know more in the Fox booth.
Yeah, I think the ability to own a mistake, having that humility, we're not perfect. You know, you're going to make a mistake from time to time. And those are few and far between when you talk about the officials. I think for fans to really to see what they're able to do at game speed and how fast that game moves, and for them to be right 98% of the time when you're talking fractions of seconds, whether it's a catch, 2 feet down, possession as he goes to the ground, all those things that happen so quickly. I'm always amazed at how often they're correct. You go back to replay and you see it, and you may have thought it was the wrong call, but it ends up being the right call. So I think this is great. Our guys were fantastic in week one. I don't think any of them have an issue where they may make a call that's not correct, and you get together as a group. And the most important thing is being right. And if you're not right, you've got to be able to have the humility to kind of go on to the next play, forget about that, and be better next snap.
I love the concept of using replay to be right. I think replay should be on every, there should be replay for every call. There's no reason. We have the technology, especially the first down, two guys holding a chain 10 yards apart and then having the umpire carry it, pinching it forward. It's preposterous. If you can do it with technology, I think that makes the most sense. What else do we think can be replaced? Tennis replaced all the lines, people. Is there a scenario where there's one guy in a chair now during a tennis match? Is there a scenario where there's one referee on the field in football?
I think if we do have a union, that's where the union's going to step in. they're not going to let that one happen. So, I wouldn't want it to get to that point. I grew up in the area where there was no replay, so that human error was something that you just had to accept. And there's a number of games that football fans can go back to through the course of history. And those were some hard lessons where when you looked at the replay, you're like, well, that wasn't right. And you got to live with that decision that was made on the field. So I've always accepted the human error component. I think perfection is something you strive for, but you're never going to attain. So I think trying to find that balance, that right balance between having, you know, the officials on the field, having the ability for replay to step in when necessary, especially if it's a game-changing play or it's going to flip something. All of a sudden, you've got a team that doesn't win a game, that doesn't make the playoffs because of a call. That those are the tough ones. And when we can step in with technology in that area, I think it's the right thing to do.
But as EVP of football operations for the now merged UFL, don't you want to eliminate all errors? I assume one of your goals is on field to make it perfect, to show the NFL and to show your fans that we're going to have a product here that is beyond reproach.
I think we're trending that way. We, you know, Mike and Dean do have the ability to step in. And one of the things we did in the past was if a penalty was called, you could overrule and have that flag picked up, but you couldn't have a flag put on. And this year, in certain instances, we've allowed them to be able to put the flag on, which was an area that we saw. And a lot of this is usually an unsportsmanlike, unnecessary roughness. You know, sometimes in the pace of play and the heat of the battle, something gets missed and all of a sudden the replays start rolling out and you see a punch that was thrown or you see you know, disrespect to your opponent. And but still, it's passed. You can't put that flag on. We've offered the opportunity to be able to do some of those things this season. So I think we continue to trend that way. You know, Mike and Dean both have their eyes on every snap. We give our coaches one opportunity during the course of the game to challenge anything on that play. And it was great last week. It happened in the San Antonio DC game. And they were able to get a touchdown overturned that really flipped that game. And it was not called on the field. And, you know, Wade got his staff together and they looked at it and they threw the challenge and they got the call that they wanted to get. Now, it's got to be specific. You can't open up the entire play. You've got to be able to go to the official and tell him specifically what you want to check on replay. And that worked for us in week one. So those are some of the areas as we strive to be as good as you can be when it comes to rules and football and being correct. I think we've added a number of different elements that are getting closer to that point.
Do you have to take the call every time Rock calls? If he would call you right now in the middle of our show, are you hanging up on me because the Rock is calling you?
I have an automatic reply on my phone that says, I can't take your call right now. I'll be back to you as soon as I can. And I'd give him that one for you, Dad.
Oh, I appreciate that, Darryl. It looks like you're in some sort of, for people not watching, but you can watch this on Roku channel. And if you listen on Sirius, it looks like you're in, are you in a club, in a clubhouse storage area, in a locker room storage area?
I am in the heartbeat of the UFL. We are at the warehouse out in Arlington right now where everything is stored. So this is where all the pre-magic happens. So everything looks great on the field on Saturdays and Sundays. So out here bothering Anders Butel and Bobby Monica at the warehouse. So
there's tremendous reception there. And I'm thinking back to our storage at Marlins Park and thinking about all the stuff that players have. And I'm thinking about your merged league. So I want to now get into that. You're responsible for something. The leagues have had issues. You know this. This is not a surprise. Sustainability, profitability. But now it feels like you've set upon a group of cities with a structure that has legs. Is that the feeling inside the front offices and inside the UFL that I think we finally have done it?
Yeah, I think you make a great point where, you know, this has been tried in the past and for, you know, myriad reasons it hasn't been successful. I think the word that you use, sustainability, is critical. Obviously, profitability. Those are the two areas that we're working really hard on. Sustainability. I think the big thing that's happened to me since I got involved in spring football back with the Alliance of American Football in 2019, you really had to try and recruit the agents to convince their players to come play in your league. You know, now we're getting those phone calls from the agents. So I think we've developed trust over the last two seasons with the USFL being able to start and finish two regular seasons and crown a champion, with the XFL able to complete their regular season last year and crown a champion. We have shown everybody that spring football is sustainable. And then for us to come together in the merger and create the UFL and really what we've talked to a lot of people about this year is the talent level that's in this league this year is as good as it's been since the early 80s when the USFL was trying to go head to head with the NFL and you had Reggie White and Steve Young and Herschel Walker and Doug Flutie and, you know, those types of players in that league. You know, going from 16 teams down to 8 teams, you're going from, you know, 800 players down to 400 players. And, you know, we've got guys that were starters last year that are no longer in our league. Starters from last year that are playing backup roles on their teams this year. So we've created a higher level of talent. We've created better depth at the key positions, offensive line, quarterback. So that gives you that sustainability. That gives you that quality of play. Now we've got to turn that into the profitability component. It was a good opening weekend. It was Easter weekend. The ratings were good on Saturday. Obviously not as good on Sunday when you talk about the platforms that the broadcasts were on. As opposed to what we had on Saturday. And then also the fact that it was Easter Sunday. We had an 11 o'clock kickoff Central Time. We had a 2 o'clock kickoff Central Time. And it's hard for the family to get to church and have breakfast and go through the Easter baskets and then get out to a football game. But San Antonio was fantastic. Houston did a really nice job, but we really need to work on the attendance component. That's going to be a big thing for us moving forward. We really do feel like the quality of the game will translate in ratings. And now it's just getting that buy-in from our markets to come out and support the home team when we come in on the weekends.
Well, you're a tremendous spokesperson for it. But one of the questions that I guess I would ask very simply is, what's the runway like? because you're talking about attendance, and I had to deal with poor attendance as well, and it was a runway issue. How many years can we fund losses? Because that's why businesses stop, is because there's run out of money. What's going on here with the merged entity? Has that given a longer runway?
Yeah, we talked about that, those myriad reasons why the other, you know, spring football leagues weren't able to make it. And you could look at it for various reasons, but I really do believe it does come down to finances when it's all said and done. You know, even during the course of, you know, the COVID pandemic, you know, that was really a money decision, you know, at that time in 2020. So I think what you have to do is you have to look at the landscape and take everything into account. You mentioned the eight markets that we're in right now, and, you know, how much are they embracing everything, and how do we demonstrate that there's profitability there? You know, how do the ratings, do they continue to climb? I think week one is always kind of that curiosity factor. You know, how many people did we hook on week one and get them to tune back in here in week two? You know, it helps when you have Jake Bates hit a 64-yard field goal twice at the end of the game. You know, that's awesome in our first week, you know, to make spring football history. So we had a lot of good things going on week one. We want to be better every single week. And what we learned in week one is, hey, where did we have our gaps, and can we be better in week two? And that's been the charge here for everybody in the UFL. We don't expect to be our best in week one, but we do expect to be our best in week 10 as we head into the playoffs. So let's find those areas where we can get incrementally better every week. And that's going to help prove that this is sustainable. That helps us in our conversations moving forward at the end of the year to find out how much longer we can extend that runway and continue to show growth, continue to show profitability, and that we're moving in the right direction. And that's going to be the most important thing. We won't be great in week one, and we weren't. But when we finish the season, we've got to be at our best. And that gives us leverage going into the offseason, you know, to have something strong as a platform to stand on and talk about, you know, the length of the runway and moving forward.
Do you realize, Daryl, that you just mentioned a 60-plus yard field goal twice as though it was nothing? And I was trying to think, and TJ, I'm thinking about my life as a football fan. And Daryl, I'm curious in your career as well. Has anything changed more from the 90s than the fact that people can kick 50 to 60-yard field goals and we don't even talk about it like it's
nothing?
Right. I know. The 50-plus yard field goal is commonplace now. I mean, if you can't do that, you can't kick in the NFL. And the great story about Jake Bates is that was his first field goal since high school. When he was at Arkansas, he was a kickoff specialist. So he's got a big, strong leg, but they never really let him kick field goals. So you know, this is a huge moment for him. He's got everybody's attention because not only was it the longest field goal in spring football history, but he became one of three professional football players to kick a 64-yard field goal or longer, joining Justin Tucker and Matt Prater. And everybody knows who Justin Tucker and Matt Prater are, but nobody really knows who Jake Bates is. So it was a great weekend for him. It was a great weekend to demonstrate what this league is all about. It's about opportunity. It's about changing the narrative that the NFL may have on you as a player from your college days. And I think a lot of people might have looked at Jake Bates as a kickoff specialist to make sure we're getting that touchback. But with the kickoff rule changing in the NFL, you know, how much value does that carry? Now you're going to want somebody who can be very creative with the type of ball flight they have coming off that kickoff, more so than just a big powerful leg that kicks it into the end zone. So, you know, what Jake Bates did is probably open up the door for him not to be a kickoff guy in the NFL as the summer rolls around, but actually to get into a heated field goal kicking competition with one of the teams in the NFL.
Hey, Daryl, it's TJ here. I want to say, first of all, congratulations on the success with the UFL and everything going forward. But I'd like to talk to Moose right now, if I could. You know, you don't know, I happened to meet Daryl. We were going to Vegas for the Super Bowl. I was in the security line. I turned around, and he was standing behind me, and I literally just, like, froze because I'd never met him before. Met Emmett, met Irv, met Troy. I never got to meet Moose, so that was a pleasure running into you in the airport that day, sir. So the question being, as a Cowboys fan, can you give me a little bit of hope? I know you're very busy with what you've got going on now, but I'm assuming you still have, you know, some boots on the ground, as they say. I heard we're all in. It doesn't appear like we're all in. I need help. I'm hanging on.
You do need help.
I'm like Hans Gruber in Die Hard. Like, I'm hanging on, but at some point I feel like I'm slipping. So give me a reason, if you could, just in all of Cowboy Nation, give us a reason to hold on. Like, tell me something positive, please, Moose. I need it. I got to have it.
Sorry, Daryl.
I know. I'm thinking. We were as aggressive as we possibly could be in the off season due to salary cap restraints. I think it's going to be one of those processes where we were at the Big 12 Pro Day, and I bumped into Will McClay and just chatted with him for a while. And it's been a hard off season. You know, you get into those years where you can't be aggressive, and then there's some players that are out there that you know can help your team. But you just can't make those moves. And there's also, you know, a little bit of a transitional phase going on with the offensive line. And I think that was always the one constant for Dallas, was that offensive line had been great for over a decade. And it looks like they're heading towards a little bit of a transitional phase right now. And how quickly can they get that all patched up? I think going all the way back to like 2008, 2009, around there is when they realized that if they were going to be competitive, that was where their focus needed to be. And they had the luxury to really do a tremendous job with their draft, getting guys in and put together a tremendous offensive line for over a decade. And we're in transition right now. And that's going to be something that they need to get fixed. I'm interested to see the change in the defense. You know, Mike Zimmer coming in and taking over for Dan Quinn. You know, that's a much different style of defense. It's a different body type that you want on the roster. So how do you transition that, you know, during the course of the offseason when you can't make as many moves as you would like to do? So I think for me, Dallas right now is a really big wait and see. I you know, there's a lot of movement going on within the division, within the conference, and within the league. And Dallas is really kind of been sitting on their hands because they have to. So nothing has really changed. And you can see some of the teams on that landscape that have gotten better. And one of them is right here, you know, in the state of Texas. There's a lot of chatter about what the Houston Texans are doing, and they're going all in. And, you know, they've got that ability with C.J. Stroud on that rookie contract. That's when you have to go chase those Super Bowls. You know, they did it in Kansas City with Patrick Mahomes. Buffalo was trying to do it with Josh Allen, but they were bumping into Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. But that's when you have to make your hay. And that's probably, for me, beyond the field goal kicker that you talked about, one of the bigger things for me that's been a change. I was never really a window guy, that you had this window of opportunity for 3 years, 5 years to go win a championship. But as we see the salary of the quarterback continue to rise and really impact what you can do on your roster and all those supporting positions, you do have to have success when that quarterback is on that rookie contract, because that's when you're going to be able to get the top quality at all those key positions around the quarterback. And so you can see Houston doing that right now, and they've generated quite a bit of conversation here in the state of Texas.
It's
much
fascinating,
more than the Dallas Cowboys have done.
But you can't have it both ways, because you can win a Super Bowl, you can do it Rams style, win it, and then it's not sustainable. Or you can go all in Dolphin style, not win it, and it's not sustainable. But either way, there is no avoiding the window. And so having players outperform their contract, Daryl, that has become a much bigger subject. And one of the business parts of the UFL is clearly there is a cap on player expenses. And one of the things is you're managing your league. How often do you talk internally about the cost structure of players as being one of the most important aspects of profitability, but also then wondering, how do we get around it if we can get a big time player to come play in this league?
Yeah, that's one of the big ones that we wrestle with. And I've seen it work, you know, in different ways in some of the other leagues that we were in the springtime, and you had a quote unquote marquee contract. And you offer that out and the player underperforms or the player gets hurt. And now you've either got somebody who's on the sideline with a bigger contract, and the guy who's got the standard contract is out on the field playing lights out. So there's always a risk to doing that. So, you know, I really have enjoyed just kind of our standard contract across the board. You know, to get the type of players, whether it's the offensive line, the quarterback, the edge rusher, do we have to take a look at that model? Do we have to adjust that model? If so, what's our ceiling when we talk about salary pool across, you know, 8 teams and 50 players? When we talk about sustainability and profitability, a lot of that goes into expenses. And that's one of the things that we have to be very careful about. So that's something that I know a lot of us talked about because it was something that existed in the XFL to a small degree, but we did not do that in the USFL. We tried that year one, and it didn't work out the way we had hoped. So in year two, we pulled back and just went standard across the board. I like to do it on the back end. I like to do it merit-based. Let's reward the players from the regular season who were the star players of our league and give them a merit-based financial reward as opposed to something that's going to lure them into our league. So a lot of different ways to look at it.
That's epic.
But hoping that we can stay with that merit-based formula because I really want to reward the guys who believed in what our vision was, came to play in our league, became very good football players here for us and played at a very high level.
Giving bonuses to players based on what they've done to deserve them. That is epic.
Novel.
Daryl, thank you so much. The Executive Vice President of Football Operations for UFL. If you have not checked out a game, you're silly because spring football, A, you get your football fix, yep. And B, it is quite quality football. Daryl, thank you for joining the Rich Eisen Show with me.
You are welcome. And one more with your movie thing. Robin Williams, as a dramatic actor, is very, very undervalued. I know he's a great comedian, but Good Will Hunting, Dead Poets Society, there's so many good films with Robin Williams as a dramatic
actor.
There's
so many. Will Ferrell, the same. Underrated.
Yes, exactly, right?
Great. We could talk movies for a whole... Maybe you'll come on Nothing Personal and we'll just do movies together.
I'd love to.
Thank you, Daryl. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Moose.
Take care, guys.
Syracuse legend, Daryl Johnston.
Dallas Cowboys legend.
God, yeah, David, was he a good fullback.
We were headed to Vegas for the Super Bowl, and going, like I said, I was going through security. I turned around, and I'm like, holy crap, that's Moose behind me. And I'm going through security. And mind you, I'm going extra slow because I wanted him to catch up with me.
So did he smell good?
I didn't get that. I didn't get that close to him.
Call back!
I like your style. But I did get to meet him before we boarded, and I think he smelled pretty pleasant, if I recall correctly. Yeah.
Moose is still listening.
Moose is dying.
No!
Right now.
Mike, your one job is to say when the guest is no longer on.
No, he's off.
He's off, but he heard all of that.
He heard all that.
I think you may get cologne in 6 to 8 months.
Let's hope so. Let's go to break.
By the way, I was a sound mixer for the Bates kick. That thing was amazing. Like, I was doing that game, and when he kicked the first time and they iced him, and they're like, is he going to do it again? And he came right back, and it was farther. It was unbelievable. Some NFL team is going to get him.
Mike, did you not hear us say we have to go to break?
I know that. All right. But I'm just... I want to add a little. Sorry, people.
Whenever you're done, just let me know.
Every day when we're on the road, people around us endanger themselves and others by using their phones while driving. They think they're hiding it, but we've all seen them and know exactly who they are. For instance, there's the sneak-a-peeker who darts their eyes between the road and their texts. There's also the got-a-ticketer looking upset because they just got a ticket for using their phone while driving. And what about the fast-scroller who can't drive 5 minutes without updating their social feeds? Or the nightlighter, who has that mysterious glow illuminating the inside of their car after dark. Do any of these sound familiar? If they remind you of yourself or someone you know, rethink your behavior before you find yourself becoming the fender benderer, the veering off the roader, or worst of all, the driver who killed someone. Put the phone away or pay. Paid for by NHTSA.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
What was it like shooting that scene, though, with Ray Kinsella and his father?
What I did was I went back to when I first read it. And so I become the audience when I read it. And when I read it, I went, I couldn't believe that it had orchestrated itself to that thing. And I had that feeling on the couch. And so I knew if I played that straight, if I didn't wink at anybody, that these players did come. You know, that's my corn. You know, they kept coming after me. I wasn't going to be able to do that movie. I was going to do Revenge, and I got into a... Finally, that Revenge kept getting pushed, and finally I had to put my foot down and say, look, if you don't get this movie together, I'm going to go to do this movie in the corn. I asked the director, why did you hold out for me so long? Why? And he said, well, and this is one of the greatest actors we've ever seen. He goes, they wanted me to do it with Robin Williams. And I said, Robin Williams is perfect. He said, yeah, but when I think of Robin, I think he does hear voices in the corn. And I don't want that. People don't believe you hear voices. That's a director that makes a save. That's a Mariano Rivera, you know?
Sure.
It's a save. He saved his movie because of his belief in an idea, you know, not the quality of actor, because Robin Williams will never...
Of course.
This is a guy so special. But I was curious. I said, he's actually a bigger star than me. You know, whatever. And he goes, I need somebody that you don't think hears voices.
And that would be you. I've never heard Robin Williams was considered for that role. That's unbelievable. And then you did it, and obviously we're talking about it today.
Yeah. It had gold dust on it when I read it, because I did that little intake of breath. Do you want to have a catch? And of course, I wept myself.
Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. It's David Sampson sitting in for Rich today and tomorrow. Well, definitely today. Wait to see for tomorrow. I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk. Yeah, you'll get to me after. I'm busy right now. We're doing some business here. It's furnished by Grainger.
Grainger.
With supplies and solutions for every industry, Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. I like that idea of just being able to stop by.
I mean, they got stores, you just stop by. Yeah. It's like on Friday night, you go to Blockbuster, you go to your local video store, just stop by and pick a movie for the weekend.
Except it had to be the movie that was extended, because it had the film behind it.
Right.
It couldn't be one of the just covers that was against the wall.
Well, because it was rented, it was out.
Yeah. I tended to go to the bin. I was a bin guy.
The return bin.
Go to the return bin if you want the best movies.
Yeah. Right.
Little nugget there.
Yep.
The return for people of that age.
People of that age.
There's a whole generation of people
age.
What are they
people
talking about?
Yeah, right. I'm of that age.
Thank you, Mike, for remembering the callback. I know that you're out the door right now.
No, I'm not.
David, you're wearing the 2003 Marlins World Series ring, which is so cool. Championship rings are incredible. It's cool that you can wear it. It's not enormous like the NFL ones have become. But 2003, famous because of Steve Bartman. You were there for game six, right? In Chicago?
Look at that thing.
I was there. I was president of the team. Sort of had to be there. What does that mean?
It's
like,
I was just setting up.
Hey, Rich Eisen Show nominated for an Oscar. Were you there?
Emmys. We have been there. And we've lost.
That's not the Steve Bartman game.
You won.
Can we start with that?
Yeah, go.
It's not the Steve Bartman game.
Well, it's the Alec Gonzalez buffed double play ball game.
It's the Dusty Baker uses his pitchers too much game.
Ooh.
Let me give you a little nugget about that game.
Ooh, shots fired.
Dusty Baker, if you go back in that series and you go back in that season, he had a habit, and I love Dusty, but he had a habit of pitching his guys until their arms fell off. Old school style. Mark Pryor, earlier in that series, game two, check out the box score. We're getting crushed. And Pryor stays in, keeps pitching. And we were like, what's happening here? It's the end of a season. Are you checking for me?
Yeah, I am checking.
Please
actually.
Do. Go to the box score. Tell me I'm wrong.
Hold on. Let's see.
Well, no, I'm not going to hold on. We're live.
Well, I mean, you can just talk and then I'll
keep going.
Well, game two, yeah, Mark Pryor. The Cubs won 12-3.
How many innings did Mark Pryor go?
Let's see.
Okay, nice. Nice bridge.
Got to scroll down. What, seven innings?
You're just not believing me.
Hey, throw 116 pitches.
Does that seem necessary in a 12-3 game? I'm just asking whether that seems necessary.
Well, was it 12-3 when he came out?
Go, that's also part of it. It's called the line score.
Yeah, Brad Penny gave up seven runs.
Early. So I digress.
Two innings.
Except, let's go to game six, where Mike Pryor was absolutely dealing. We could not touch him. But in the dugout, Jack McKeon and the hitting coach at the time, the late, great Bill Robinson, Pittsburgh Pirate great, was the hitting coach of that team, said, just hang in there, guys. Pryor's going to get tired. We're going to get to him. And in the eighth inning, we started to get to him.
Well, you got to him for eight runs in the eighth inning.
Well, he wasn't. It was they went to Farnsworth, et cetera, et cetera. But Pryor got tired. And baseball is nine innings. It's sort of like when you're a football fan and saying, hey, my team is great until the two-minute drill. And then they give it up or they can't score. Well, then your team stinks. You've got to have that part of your game. You've got to be able to close a game. And the Cubs could not close it. I love, in my career, winning on the road. Winning on the road's way better than winning at home. Having shutting down an entire stadium full of people crying.
Oh, yeah. Quiet stadium.
Oh, God, it's so good.
Quiet stadium.
When you can hear a pin drop. We left that game. We knew we'd win game seven. The clubhouse after game six, we were just very matter of fact. We weren't jumping up and down celebrating. We sort of patted each other on the shoulder or on the buttocks, got on the team bus, business, and came back game seven. Had to come back in game seven to win, but it's hard to forget. The Cubs have now won a World Series, so the curse is over. The Red Sox have now won a World Series. Curse is over, but at that time, that was a big thing.
Yeah.
That the Cubs
White Sox, too. White Sox, Red Sox, and Cubs had all gone 80-plus years without winning.
And the White Sox won in 05, Red Sox in 04, Marlins in 03, much to the chagrin of baseball, who didn't want a small team like the Marlins. When Bud Selig handed me the trophy and our owner.
The hunk of metal?
He did it. Well, that's a different commissioner.
Sorry.
And that was a misstatement. Do you know that you get from Tiffany's a little nugget here? They only make three trophies per year. One goes to the team, one goes to the owner, and one goes to the president.
Do you have one at your house?
I do.
Oh, wow. Oh, that is cool.
I do.
Full size?
Cool. Yes, there's three full-size trophies per year, and that's it.
Because NFL players can buy their own Lombardi trophy, but a small version.
So MLB, you can buy the trophy, the World Series trophy, but it's not the actual size.
Oh, the player.
A player can.
Player can.
Yes. Not just you
can.
That
is cool.
I mean, you could get the giveaway one, Mike. Yeah. Just that'd be a good
like
one.
The bobblehead version of
the bobblehead. We did all of that the following years.
Oh, of course.
You can trade, as Lebatar likes to say, you can trade on winning a World Series. That's a career. I mean, you're a champion. You can never take it away.
Champion.
Exactly.
Rings matter.
Champ.
Jewelry.
So where were you for the play in game six?
Right above the dugout. And a little known fact, because people changed the story after, during the course of the game, we were very aware when the foul ball happened. And what the dugout was yelling was, let's make him famous.
No way.
Because what we did that year that was very unbelievable is when a team would make an error, we would take advantage and score a bunch of runs. We'd come back and win. And when Alou didn't catch that, and we thought the call was going to be made for fan interference. And when it wasn't, we said, all right, let's make him famous. Now, did we want him to have the hellscape that has been his life? No, that's not right.
No.
Because he's not the reason the Cubs lost. It is Dusty Baker. It is Alex Gonzalez, and it's some timely hitting by us. But by the way, they had Kerry Wood in game seven, who was a world beater.
Out that area.
Yes.
And he hit a three-run homer to support himself in a game seven. But still, they couldn't win. So it's not Steve Bartman.
And you mentioned the pitches thing. Pryor threw 118 in game two, threw 119 in game six.
That's a lot of pitches. As you may know.
When it's cold in October, sure is.
It was very cold, but it felt really good. Waking up in Chicago the next day, not knowing where we're flying to, because it was game seven. The next day was your game.
Right.
Your famous game that you loved so much. And
worst day of my life.
I thought today was going to be that. I thought that we would have a total switch. We've totally lost TJ. He's like, it's not his worst day, and you're not the worst fill-in host for Rich.
You talk about you knew you were going to win game seven. I mean, I felt like that in 04. I mean, I'm just a fan, obviously, but you win the next three. Yeah, of course we're winning game seven in Yankee Stadium. We were toast.
We were done.
And Damon hits a grand slam in the first inning. See you later. That game's over.
I agree.
And David, just real quick, you didn't lose me. I was just posting a picture of your ring on Instagram right now.
And so
I just figured that you were paid through the second hour. And that was it.
And
like
I knew
third
the Sox
hours,
were
if you like.
Win
it.
The World Series against St. Louis. That was a wrap.
Yeah.
Everybody on earth knew it. And it was a 4-game sweep. Come on.
I'd like you to be happier as a Red Sox fan than you are. My basic impression of you, having only seen you through television, is that you were a lighthearted, like, interesting domed guy. Now you seem more bitter about the Red Sox and about your fandom.
Well, because he hasn't won in a couple years.
I mean, David, I find it to be unseemly.
There are 4-year-olds in Boston who don't know what it's like
what
to go to a duck boat.
Yeah, they have no idea.
Think of the kids.
They're like, what's a duck boat?
Think of the kids.
Yeah.
I'd like to bring people behind the scenes a little bit to this show.
That's what we do.
Because
we
during the break, we keep talking like we do when the red light's on.
Yeah.
So I actually, as we sit here, have no recollection if we had that conversation on air or off air.
It was both.
So we're now calling back the duck boat.
We're calling, yeah, duck boat.
Twice?
Well, we love the duck boat.
I mean,
wait, we got to polish
talk about
the duck
desperate rundowns.
Polish the duck boat.
We were talking about this if the Celtics were to win. Those duck boat batteries haven't been used in how many years?
Five. Since
yeah,
19.
So they, I told Brock, they're probably putting new batteries in those duck boats right now because they ain't going to turn over.
Do you know what you don't want in sports is you don't want an insurmountable lead too early in a conference or a division and not play meaningful games for a long period of time because then you get stale.
Wait, real talk? Really worried about Boston not finishing this off this year. Could have been the best team all season and haven't played a meaningful game in quite a long time.
It's really hard to turn it on.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that you have to look for is that there is an advantage sometimes to the play-in tournament because the 7 and 8 seed, they've had to win to get there. And
well,
so then they faced
the
1 and 2.
Year. I mean,
they
I'm
wrote
sure
it all the way to the finals.
Talking about the Heat. But yeah, just look at Miami last year.
I'm a New Yorker.
I know, but you go on that other show. Talk about Miami sports.
I may never go back. I mean, it's so much fun with you guys, and the air's working now.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm feeling good about all of it.
It's cool in here. You know, they're bringing the ice in.
And I love that because, like you said, you only see us on TV if you watch. So I'm curious when we come back, what are your thoughts preconceived? And now that you've been here, what are your thoughts?
You just called me bitter. I'll
take a few minutes to think about that. We'll be back.
We'll come back from break.
Domed.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
This guy over there, Brockman, with his Red Sox cap over there. Do you have the David Price sound that where he was bitching about David Price after the Yankees beat him up in, what was that, Game 2? Play it. Go for it for Bill Burr.
I want him to quit. I want him to retire on the spot.
Yeah, he's not going to do
that. I didn't go that
hard.
That's what I want. He was terrible.
Part of you, so furious at David Price.
I'm so furious.
But you were kind of feeling good, though. Like, you're getting it off your chest. Like, you couldn't
it was
have been,
therapeutic,
see,
but
that's
like,
what I'm saying. That's what's with, is there something about
maybe another sports fan that sees their guy?
I don't know. Just like, maybe I'm just a much more sunny disposition type guy.
Were you screaming at Harbaugh?
This is about him. This is about how great he is. Oh, now I see where this is going. I was confused.
No.
You know, Rich, okay, you spoon fed it to me. I want to tell you something, Rich. Out of all the sports shows I go on, I think you are the nicest, most even-keeled, pleasant, respectful to other fan base.
No, I just think it goes back to like the Tea Party, you know, it goes all the way back to like like you don't feel represented, you feel like you're taxed, you feel like a taxed
sports fan. Do you feel the jail?
You haven't been represented in the sports universe.
It's always great when I have another teammate come in to studio because I'm teamed up against 2-on-1 with the New York.
Don't you hate anytime like there's a big Boston game? What they show, they always show like lighthouses, lobster fishermen, and Paul Revere. Like, oh yeah, that's Massachusetts. I never saw any of that. You know, who goes to a tourist attraction in your own city?
Exactly.
You only do it when relatives come to town.
Oh, like, do you want to go?
I want to go to the USS Constitution. Oh, do you?
Here's where Cheers
you
is.
Stand in line down there. Well, have a great time. I'm going to go to a dive bar. Where do you want to go next? You want to go to Cheers? Yeah. Just to let you know, it doesn't look like that when you go inside. So just take a picture outside.
Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. I am David Sampson. I'm clearly not Rich Eisen, as the entire crew has figured out like 2 minutes in.
Way more hair.
More hair. Not as talented. Thankful to Rich for letting me sit in this chair. I don't know if you're aware of this, but Game Time. Game Time is now an authorized ticket marketplace of Major League Baseball, which makes getting tickets even faster and easier. Prices on the Game Time app actually go down the closer it gets to first pitch. With killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, views from your seat, and their lowest price guarantee, Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying MLB tickets. And I would know that because I've used Game Time, and it's outstanding. Game Time is the ticketing app that gives you complete peace of mind with your purchase. You can find last-minute seats, exclusive flash and sponsor deals on tickets for football, basketball, baseball, concerts, used it, comedy, theater, used it, and more. And Game Time provides the all-in pricing feature that shows the total up front. True, with no surprise fees at checkout. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, use code RICH, R-I-C-H, for $20 off your first purchase. Restrictions apply, of course. Visit GameTime.co for terms. Again, create an account and redeem code RICH for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. Whew. I love Game Time.
I'm using it this weekend.
If you haven't used it, it's easy to download, and they really do have amazing seats. And there's nothing hidden. That is my favorite part about it, because
yes.
I don't want to wait till the checkout, because then you feel guilty for backing out because you get upset with all the fees and you sort of get
backed.
And so you just keep going even though you're not happy. Game Time, you press it, and the minute you look at it, you're off to the races.
And I like the picture of the view of your seat.
Yeah, the view.
That's what
the
I
seat.
Love.
And it is exactly right. I used them for a Celtics game.
Yeah, you did.
And I went, and the only thing they didn't do, and I'd like him to work on it, is there was someone in front of me way taller than I was.
You want so the height of
I'd
the
like
person.
A guarantee of 5'7 or shorter in front of me at all times. Where's that in the Game Time app?
You want the measurements want of the person who bought the seat in front of
me? That's what
of
I want. I want the measurements
good
of
feature.
The guy in front of
I
me
like
at
it.
The game.
Let's work on
or
that.
At the theater.
That's just
true.
It happens both places. I end up getting screwed.
You know, in Las Vegas, if you go to a concert, people get pissed if you stand.
I'm a stander.
Me
Are
too.
You really?
With
me
reckless
too.
Disregard to anyone behind me.
You see, I'm
and
not.
And someone punched me
I'm
in the
not.
Face because I was standing once.
No.
No.
I've told you this story.
Oh, yeah. You don't know this
no,
story,
no, no,
Mike?
No. You've never heard this?
No, no, no. I've never heard this
You got to hear this story.
This is 2019.
You've never told this on air, I don't think.
Oh, I don't think so.
No.
So Sarah, my lady, is friends with Brooks and Dunn. So we got hooked up with tickets to see Brooks and Dunn with Reba McEntire at Caesars. It was amazing. And, you know, I think I was pretty inebriated. I think we just found out that we were having a baby, so Sarah was not partaking. So it was just me.
So you drank for two?
I drank for two, three, really. And I was having a great time. Brooks and Dunn, awesome. Great show. I'm standing, I'm clapping. Guy behind me, hey, my wife can't see, sit down. Yo, bro, we're at a concert. I'm standing. Got so heated.
This.
He was older than I think he was
this.
Like 60.
Oh, he's
and
one of
he
us.
And he kind of open-handed me right. He was of a certain age. He open-handed me right in the face.
That's not a punch. I thought a punch had to be close-fisted.
No, no. If you get if somebody hits you, isn't it's something.
It was kind of like. Slap.
Yeah,
but it wasn't a slap.
Will Smith slapped Chris Rock.
Right,
he didn't punch.
But he fully went on a slap motion. This was a punch motion
punch,
with
slap,
kind
yeah.
of an open hand. He was like kind of like.
He hit you.
It was insane.
What did you do?
I was stunned at first. I was like, did that really just happen? Then security kind of immediately ran over and like asked if I wanted to press charges and stuff. I was like, no, just get him out of here. And they got escorted out.
You had him ejected?
Yeah.
Because you were standing?
Yeah, because I was
standing. And his wife couldn't get up.
Because I was standing. You know, then she moved and sat next to me where I had kind of my bag full of posters and stuff. She just sat on them, smushed all of them.
Were they signed posters?
I can't remember.
I never
I
heard
know
that story.
Bobby. Yeah, it was insane.
That's insane.
Do you know
in
that
Vegas
with my mouth,
like
I've never
stand.
Been punched? or slapped. I've always talked my way out of any precarious situation.
Yeah, I lost that. Teeth because I got
And I've never thrown a punch or a slap. Ever.
He's a lover, not a fighter.
I'm way
Well, if we're into like weird stuff like that, I've been in fights and stuff, but I've never had a nosebleed, knock wood.
Have you ever been at altitude?
Been in altitude? I've been punched in the nose. I've had a football hit me in the nose. I've been elbowed in the nose. I've been kneed in the nose. I've had a lot of things happen.
And your nose has never
I've never had a gushing nosebleed in my life, knock
Do you
wood.
Bleed when you get cut?
No.
Do you have blood at all?
Well, I'm not
what I'm asking.
So that might have something. So
not that impressive if you're a robot.
DJ has no blood.
My own blood. Yeah, believe it or not, just a gushing nosebleed, never in my life, Knockwood. So,
wow.
And of course, anytime I tell somebody that, the first response is, do you want one? Like, come on.
I would say that the issue with bleeding is that it can be way more scary. If you're a father, you have kids.
Yeah.
When they cut their head or something and the blood is gushing, man. You assume that that's it, that you have done your job incorrectly and that your child is in big trouble. And then you learn just to put some ice cubes on it. And by the third kid, you don't even stop watching the game when the kid's bleeding. That's what you do like with boiling pacifiers or bottles. You do everything for your first kid. By the third kid, it can be in manure.
I'm in the baby. I was the baby in the family. So this, basically, this is what happened to me.
Like,
as
no
baby.
One was paying attention to you whatsoever. Well,
we now have an explanation of exactly of why I'm the way I am.
It explains so much.
It really does.
Imagine if you raised your first kid like your last kid. What would happen in your family? Ooh. Have you ever given that like a moment's thought? Riddle me that. I've had such a great first day here.
Are you the baby in your family? Do you have siblings?
I have several. I had one older sister who passed away. I'd like to end the show with that negative note. Thank you so much. Great way to end day one. Yes, I have one full sister.
Sorry.
Thank you. It was horrible. She was my age when she passed. And I have several half-siblings. A lot of divorce, intrigue. The family tree is mangled, which is exactly why I am who I am today. Because I used to get paid not to talk.
Now you're
Drew,
a talker.
At the dinner table. That I would be paid by my mom to shut up.
Because you talk too much?
Because I would talk too much.
They never did that to me. I would have been a billionaire now.
It's the first dollar. By the way, I rest my case.
Cowboys.
See, I would do that with kids. I'd be like, all right, let's play the who can stay the quietest game. And then that usually works for at least 15 minutes because they want to win. So they'll shut up.
The first job I ever had was not to talk. And the irony is now, one day into this two-day stint, sitting in Rich Eisen's chair. A, I'm very thankful for it. And the question is, will you let me come back tomorrow?
Yes!
Yes!
Well, maybe.
We'll see you tomorrow, everybody.
Perhaps.
Every day when we're on the road, people around us endanger themselves and others by using their phones while driving. They think they're hiding it, but we've all seen them and know exactly who they are. For instance, there's the sneak-a-peeker, who darts their eyes between the road and their texts. There's also the got-a-ticketer, looking upset because they just got a ticket for using their phone while driving. And what about the fast scroller, who can't drive 5 minutes without updating their social feeds? Or the nightlighter, who has that mysterious glow illuminating the inside of their car after dark? Do any of these sound familiar? If they remind you of yourself or someone you know, rethink your behavior before you find yourself becoming the fender benderer, the veering off the roader, or worst of all, the driver who killed someone. Put the phone away or pay. Paid for by NHTSA.